This is Mike Consul. Welcome to Novelist Spotlight. Thank you, as always, for joining me. I have long been fascinated with Norman Mailer, his incredible life and career. And I've only met one person, despite the fact that Norman Mailer was around for so long and met so many people, did so much. There's only one person I know who has met him, and that happens to be one of my brothers who did a short stint as a server in a restaurant inside the Sheraton Inn in Ithaca, New York, when Norman Mailer came in and had breakfast. He had your basic bacon and eggs breakfast, nothing extraordinary. And I remember my brother told me that he left a dollar or two tip, which was customary, and he was a nice enough guy. But that's the sort of guy he was. He was recognizable. My brother's not a literature guy by any stretch. And for him to recognize Norman Mailer, who I assume was in Ithaca at the time, probably speaking at Ithaca College or Cornell University, and but my brother was there, he recognized him, and he was that kind of guy that he always seemed to be on TV or in the papers. He was a very public figure. I mean, think back, Norman Mailer sold 200,000 copies of his first novel, The Naked and the Dead. That's a war novel. And it made him one of the most celebrated post-war literary figures at age 25. He was only 25 years old when that one was released. And since that time, he's written more than 30 books. He won two Pulitzer Prizes. He won at least one National Book Award. He's directed four films, written 10 screenplays, and had six wives, all of whom he cheated on profusely. I think he met his match with his second wife, Adele, because she had an appetite for promiscuity. And she cheated on him as well. He didn't like that. In fact, he stabbed her a couple times, not because she cheated on him, to my knowledge, not directly because of that. But he didn't like the fact that, or didn't believe that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So, But that was Norman Mailer. Why am I fascinated with a guy who did so many bad things in his lifetime? And I don't think ever lived up to his literary potential. And I think he would probably agree with that if he was still around today. What fascinates me is that he was a man of a huge intellect. I mean, he was very intellectual. He was very intelligent. Stop to consider that when he was 15 or 16 years old, his school instructors told his parents that he was ready for Harvard, which he eventually attended. And typical Norman Mailer, he was thinking in terms of going to MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, instead of Harvard. And those campuses are adjacent to one another in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And when he mentioned MIT to the women that he knew, the women who would be around the girls at that point, really, he would see that they'd look perplexed. Their expression was perplexed when he mentioned MIT. They weren't really familiar with it. It didn't have as big a reputation as it does now. And it's never had as big a reputation as Harvard. But when he said Harvard, they lit up. And that decided it for him, because he's the kind of guy who was always obsessed with how many women he could sleep with. He loved women on that level, but was, of course, considered a misogynist by feminists of his era. And he did a lot of awful things to women, the truth be told, and to men. He often settled things with fistfights. And not even settling things, he might just decide he wanted to slug somebody, and he'd do that. Now, he also wrote a book about writing. It's called The Spooky Art, Some Thoughts on Writing. And that book was published basically on his 80th birthday. His birthday was on January 31, which makes him an Aquarius if you're into the zodiac. He died on November 10th, 2007 at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. And in between, he lived an outrageous life, one you probably couldn't even portray as a fictional character because it wouldn't be believable. He had this just ostentatiously bad behavior that became very commonplace. You know, one of the stories that circulated during the early 1960s said that Mailer was taking his two poodles for a walk one night in Central Park, and he returned home exhilarated, with his left eye almost popped out of its socket. He told his wife that two sailors had, one of the sailors accused his poodles of being queer. So he handled the poodles to the other sailor and asked him to hold that while he taught his friend a lesson. So there he was in a fist fight in Central Park with a sailor who called his poodle or poodles queer. On two different occasions, Mailer tried to become mayor of New York City. His first attempt was in 1960, got no further than the inaugural party lunch for the campaign, along with the standard assembly of political bigwigs and so on, the judge and journalists. Mailer invited a lot of these people. Well, he also invited a lot of the city's disenfranchised people, homeless people, drunks, people with criminal records, who he had met during his research, mostly in bars for the campaign, and the less fashionable parts of the metropolitan area. And these were the kinds of people whose interests he claimed to represent. But at the party, most seemed more interested in the free drinks that were available. Several fights broke out. Often, Mailer was involved in those fights, and in the early hours, he ended up staggering, bloodied, into the kitchen, and that's when he stabbed his second wife, Adele. I think I have the timeline correct. He stabbed her twice with a knife. Nearly killed her. And one biographer said his motive remains open to speculation, since all the witnesses were drunk. So Adele required emergency surgery. One of the wounds, because he stabbed her more than once, I think he stabbed her twice, and one of the wounds came within a fraction of an inch of her heart. But she ended up refusing to press charges. Now, Mailer ended up pleading guilty to a minor charge of assault and was given a suspended sentence. I guess, you know, the city ended up pressing charges, even though the wife wouldn't. He pleaded guilty to something minor. But this is part of the fascination. Here he goes and stabs his wife twice. The wife he's been cheating on, she knew all about it. She was cheating on him, and still she sticks with him. So 1969 rolls around. He runs for mayor again, and he finished fourth in a field of five people. So his campaign platform consisted of a lot of bizarre things, one of which was turning New York City into the 51st state. Private automobiles would be banned from the streets of Manhattan, and residents would instead have free use of communal bicycles, and nonprofit markets would sell fresh vegetables grown in farms surrounding the city, some of which sounds great, but completely impractical in a city like New York, not sounding like a serious political candidate. In fact, he was accused of never being really serious in his runs for mayor. He just used it as a publicity platform for himself. He loved the attention. He loved being surrounded by people of power. He thought of himself as a person of power, loved being surrounded by women, and he always wanted to sleep with them. Now, one of his biographers, Richard Bradford, whose book I'm just finishing reading, and I recommend it. It's in the episode notes if you'd like to get your hands on it. I've just been devouring. It's very good. So Richard Bradford observed that, love the way he phrased this, like most of Mailer's visionary enterprises, zealotry was matched by farce. And that's very much the story of Mailer's life. His life was just full of flights of fancy. And one of those flights of fancy was when Norman Mailer proposed that every month, this is while running for mayor, every month would contain one sweet Sunday during which electricity would be shut off. Any wonder why he didn't win? Of course, like I said, it was not a serious campaign. The second time he ran with Jimmy Breslin on the ticket, the New York Daily News columnist, a very famous columnist for the New York Daily News, also a novelist as well. So the three novels to get to his writing, the three novels that he's most proud of. And by the way, Norman Mailer admits he's never written a great novel. He says he's written some very good ones, but never a great one. And that's what he most wanted to do before he died, never really accomplished it. But the three novels that he was most proud of, the three that he felt like stood the test of time, would stand the test of time, was Harlot's Ghost. That's a 1,300-page novel about the CIA and spy work, written towards the end of his career. The Executioner's Song, which is a true life novel, was written and actually labeled a true novel about the life of Gary Gilmore. If you remember Gary Gilmore, he was a serial killer. He had shot several people. Utah law enforcement authorities got a hold of him. He insisted that he receive the death penalty, and he insisted that it be a firing squad. And he called the authorities in Utah gutless, cowards, because they wouldn't put him to death in that way. Eventually he got his wish, though, and he was given the not only the death penalty, but was killed by firing squad. The other of his three the third novel that he was most proud of and that he feels could stand the test of time was Ancient Evenings. Ancient Evenings was set in Egypt, and some critics loved it. One critic even said best English language novel since 1939. While others said it was a mess. But Norman liked it. He said, if anything will last, if any of my books will last 100 years from now, will still be remembered, those three will be it. More than The Naked and the Dead, which is really the book that his first novel and the one that exploded him on the scene and he became famous for. Everything he wrote after that, people wanted to read. People who were committed to literature and the big players in literature, they wanted to read it, even though his fiction writing was very uneven. He had certain books that were just a mess and others that were very good. The Executioner's Song won the Pulitzer Prize. He also wrote a book called The Armies of the Night, another basically true life novel about the 100,000 people who went to protest the Vietnam War at I forget if it was CIA headquarters or the Pentagon, but he wrote the book that won the Pulitzer Prize about that. Norman Mailer was best when he was mixing his journalism with his fiction writing, where he wasn't constrained. He liked doing the reporting. He liked the facts, but he didn't want to be constrained by those facts necessarily. Although The Executioner's Song, a lot of people said, hey, that's completely nonfiction. All of it's factual. There's nothing fictional about it at all. It shouldn't even be labeled a true life novel. So Armies of the Night, The Executioner's Song, both of those really were extremely journalistic, and both of them won Pulitzer Prizes. So among the novelists that he respected are, although he's said bad things about several of these novelists over the years, John Updike, John Irving, Philip Roth, Saul Bellow. And in fact, at one point he said about Saul Bellow that I can't take him seriously as a major novelist. William Kennedy, Larry McMurtry, and the great Don DeLillo, among others. And he was certainly influenced by Ernest Hemingway. He said, I didn't pattern myself after Ernest Hemingway, but I was certainly influenced by him. I got to tell you, though, he sounds like he patterned his life after Ernest Hemingway. He was a brawler, a drinker, and he was obsessed with masculinity and sex and such things. And he admits to having an identity crisis right after the publication of The Naked and the Dead. He told Charlie Rose, he did more than one Charlie Rose interview, but this one was later in life. It was about his time of his 80th birthday. In fact, Charlie Rose had him on because he had just written The Spooky Art about writing, his writing book. And he told Charlie Rose, he said, I was a simple kid, didn't know what the hell things were about, didn't know how to behave. When you don't know how to behave, you're having an identity crisis, end quote. He also told him, I always wanted to write a great novel. I've written some very good novels. The difference is a great novel changes people's lives. Never managed to do that. But, you know, like I said, I've been obsessed with Norman Mailer and his writing for a long time. I haven't read a great deal of his stuff, but I read Tough Guys Don't Dance, which I think he labeled as his worst novel he's ever written, although some would argue with that. I read The Executioner's Song and so on. The general fiction out there, he said, is kind of like McDonald's food. We have this huge equivalent of McDonald's food in the literary world, which is a certain kind of bestseller, even a huge bestseller whose taste you can detect in advance, just made for the masses, nothing that's going to change anybody's life, but people enjoy eating it, or reading it in this case. And I got to tell you, The Naked and the Dead, even though Norman Mailer doesn't say that's one of the novels that will stand the test of time, it was acclaimed not so much for its intrinsic qualities, but rather because it launched this brutally realistic subgenre of military fiction. And it was said that Catch-22 and MASH would never have existed if not for The Naked and the Dead. That's what launched those two novels. And you know, some of the other books that he wrote had to do with topics such as Marilyn Monroe, the so-called Rumble in the Jungle. That was the fight between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman in Zaire, Africa. After The Naked and the Dead, he came out with his second novel called The Deer Park, which was thinly veiled, a thinly veiled story about Palm Springs, California, although he called it Desert Dior, a fictional place in the desert where the Hollywood elite would go and battle among their egos, have promiscuous sex. It was widely panned by the critics, and he went a 10-year period without writing any novels. And that was early in his career. I think he got a little bit disenchanted by things. And the truth is, he had so many interests. He was interested in a lot of things, which brought him into movie making, screenplay writing. He directed films, as I said. He also wrote screenplays. He wrote another book called The White Negro. By the way, that Rumble in the Jungle, the Ali versus Foreman book that he wrote, is called The Fight. He also did one called Oswald's Tale, which has to do with Lee Harvey Oswald, the assassination of John Kennedy. He did a strange one called Advertisements for Myself. A lot of his books were strange, though. The frustrating thing is that he had so much talent, and he never seemed to fully develop that. He was too busy with a lot of other things, fighting with women, fighting with men, physically fighting with men, physically hitting women at times. He was a drinker. There was the marijuana in his life. He experimented with hallucinogenic drugs. It's the kind of thing where you really don't allow yourself to, let me put it this way, you're not going to reach your full potential as a writer when you are enmeshed with drugs and alcohol and all kinds of other distractions. The list goes on. There's nonfiction and fiction books. Despite the fact that Norman Mailer's work was really very poor at times, he must have had a tremendous agent because he got some great book deals. There was one deal that he got with his publishing company that paid him $250,000 a year for X number of years. He was supposed to deliver four different books, and this would take him late into his life. So it's almost like being on a $250,000 salary and being expected to go ahead and produce work that he didn't always produce that well. Of course, there was always an escape clause that said if the work is considered unsuitable, which it was at times, then we won't publish it. Then that's an opt-out on that particular book that he's produced. There he was with this big contract with a publishing company, but he had, you know, five ex-wives and he had children by different women, and he was on the hook for all of that. Well, to his credit, he did come through and pay what he owed, but that created financial stress. There are times when you just have to, if you're Norman Mailer, if you're a name of that caliber, you're going to write something because you're going to get paid for it. Now, he was also, as I alluded to, a journalist, and he wrote for The Village Voice, probably the most famous alternative weekly in all of the United States. This was back, of course, when newspapers were hot properties. And he wrote just gibberish at times, stuff that for the column that he would write would be just nonsense. You know, in the Armies of the Night, as I said, won a Pulitzer Prize, but it started as a magazine article, 90,000 words in length, probably the longest magazine article ever published. And a little wonder that it was turned into a book, and a very good book that won the Pulitzer. When he wrote Oswald's Tale, he went to Russia. This is when, after Mikhail Gorbachev came to power and had enacted his policy of perestroika and glasnost. The country was opened up. Tensions with the United States were much lower. So Norman Mailer travels there along with Lawrence Schiller, the great American photographer and an author of his own books as well, and to do research. They opened up a lot of those old KGB files, and he and Schiller were in search of information about the Kennedy assassination. They spent months there and never actually panned out. They never actually came away with information that they were looking for. Not that they were looking for something really specific, but it was basically digging for information and nothing interesting came up. But still, Oswald's Tale got written by Mailer, and it was written and published. So he went ahead and just resorted to his fictional skills, and no doubt a lot of it was nonfiction because he did do a tremendous amount of research on that. Also, he is said to have done a tremendous amount of research for Harlot's Ghost, the book about the CIA. Major book. Again, 1,300 pages. I saw one critic on Amazon saying it's a good 600 to 700 page novel. The only problem is it's 1,300 pages. So it's this big, windy piece of writing. A lot of people loved it, though. It's well-reviewed just in terms of the readers themselves, well-reviewed. The literary critics were not as kind as your everyday reader. Nothing really unusual about that. Despite his wanton lifestyle, again, man had a huge intellect. If you watch him on Firing Line debating with William F. Buckley, listen to him on the Charlie Rose interviews, if you listen to him debate Gore Vidal, you hear very clearly that the man is intelligent and he knows what he's talking about. He's researched things thoroughly. He's got a compendium of knowledge. But it didn't translate to the written page as well as it should have, and certainly his lifestyle was one that was, many people would consider antithetical to a person of great intellect. So that's it. Obviously, my fascination with Norman Mailer didn't die at the time of his death. I still find the guy really interesting, and some of you, I'm sure, do too. It might be time to kind of dust off the bookshelf and see if you've got any Norman Mailer there, maybe buy something from him. May Norman Mailer rest in peace. He will not soon be forgotten for good and bad reasons. As always, thank you for listening. For Novelist Spotlight, I'm Mike Consul.